ॐ परताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिकां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. ये मे मतम् इदम् नित्यम् ये मे मतम् इदम् नित्यम् अनुतिष्ठन्ति मानवाः अनुतिष्ठन्ति मानवाः श्रद्धावन्तो न सूयन्तः श्रद्धावन्तो न सूयन्तः मुच्यन्ते तेऽपि कर्मभिः मुच्यन्ते कर्मभिः. ये ते मतम् इदं नित्यम् अनुतिष्ठन्ति मानवाः श्रद्धावन्तः अनुसूयन्तः मुच्यन्ते ते अपि कर्मभिः. Remember, he's still talking to Arjuna and trying to really make it Arjuna understand that he does not have to take sannyasa and go to the forest. That really what is best for him is to stay in the world and practice karma yoga, because that practice of karma yoga is in staying in the world, staying in your own situation and living with what the world has to give you, living with your own prarabdha and engaging in the world, is really the best and most efficient way to gain antakarana shuddhi. It's much easier, it's much more efficient than if your mind still needs to work with the raga dveshas, the different likes and dislikes, neutralizing different habits in the mind. It's much easier to do it in the world than to try to leave the world and leave your sphere of activity, to give all of that up where you don't know, you no longer have that as a field, you know, for your sadhana, to try to give that all up and then just live a life of study and contemplation before the mind is really ready for that. You're trying to take a shortcut, but the shortcut doesn't work. Right? That's not a shortcut. I think the thing to understand about karma yoga is that between karma yoga and then actually taking the orange, renouncing everything, living that type of a lifestyle of just meditation, study, and teaching, basically. That's what a sannyasi usually does. That whether you're a karma yogi or a sannyasi, whatever the lifestyle, that doesn't mean you're a jnani. You can take the orange, but that taking the orange doesn't give you self-knowledge. And so for both the karma yogi and the sannyasi, both of them have to gain self-knowledge. And to gain the self-knowledge and have the jnana nishtha, you know, where the mind can actually hold and abide in that knowledge, a certain amount of antakarana shuddhi is there, needs to be there. A certain amount of purification of mind needs to be there. And so what is the best field for gaining that? Is the world. Both are studying. Both are gaining this vision, whether you're in the world or you've taken sannyasa. Both have to gain the vision. And both have to gain antakarana shuddhi. Unless it's what we call vidvat sannyasa. Vidvat, remember we've gone through the different types of sannyasa. Vidvat sannyasa is after you gain this knowledge and you have jnana nishtha, you've totally abiding in this knowledge now, then the teacher gives you sannyasa. And that sannyasa that the teacher has given you is now it's just an expression of, now you have knowledge, here, take the orange. That's vidvat sannyasa. But for most people, what they're doing, or often what is done, is what we call the vidisha sannyasa. The vidisha sannyasa is taking the sannyasa that with a desire to gain this knowledge. Let me live this lifestyle with a desire to gain the knowledge. So now, at what point does this lifestyle actually become conducive to your gaining the knowledge? And that's what this whole thing is about, really. Once this lifestyle is conducive, the lifestyle of sannyasa is conducive to gaining this knowledge, you almost have already have this knowledge. You already almost have the antakarana shuddhi. Right? But until then, your study should be combined with living in this life with a certain attitude, until living in this life is not a problem for you. You should be able to live, if you're jnani, you should be able to live here, you should be fine. Right? Otherwise, jnani means I can only be a jnani, I can only have self-knowledge when I'm in the forest. I don't dare come out of the forest or come out of the ashram, you know, or come, how about come out of my room? I don't dare come out of my room, right? Or my knowledge will be upset. So we have to be able to have knowledge. Wherever we are, we have knowledge, and knowledge is the truth of myself. And the world doesn't hide that from me anymore. So that's what we need. Otherwise, the knowledge hasn't been assimilated. And so Krishna is saying to Arjuna in so many ways, you know, stay and fight the war. Do your dharma. So that's what these. That's where we are right now. Arjuna has to understand this, because if you don't understand it, you don't have the value. If you don't understand why you're doing what you're doing, then it's really not helpful. You're just blindly doing something unconsciously. You don't understand what you're getting from that. So he's actually, throughout the Gita, he circles around this to make it clear again and again and again. Okay, so here in this verse, he says, yea, those who... let me do this, Sandy. Okay.
We'll
that was you. A long time ago. I did remember. Okay. Yea, those who... May means mine. May matam means my vision, my knowledge. Matam really means that which is thought by me. So it's Krishna speaking. So really it's Ishwara, in fact. So just take it as the Lord is speaking. So, yea, those who may matam idam. Idam means this. This knowledge, this vision of mine, which is nityam, timeless. Which is beautiful. Those who, let me finish the sentence and we'll look at nityam. Anutishtanti manavaha. Those people, humans, human beings, those who are descended from Manu, right? So the human beings, the people, those people who anutishtanti means those who follow this vision of mine, this teaching, this understanding of mine, which is nityam, timeless. And what that means is that there is never a time in the universe, in the world of time, there is never a time when this isn't true. And so... And that's the eternality of the truth. That's the eternality of teaching, right? Whether it's being taught thousands and thousands of years ago or it's being taught now, it's timeless. So this timeless understanding of mine, those people who follow it, and he says, Shraddha Vantaha, who have with Shraddha, those people who follow this with Shraddha. Now Shraddha means... That attitude, really, for Shraddha, you know, when we do the all of the values, Viveka, Vairagya, the Mumukshutram, but then Shama, Dhamma, Upadati, Titiksha, Samadhan, Shraddha. Shraddha is considered as really the most important of the values of all of it. Shraddha. The one who has Shraddha gains this knowledge. said in the Gita, we'll see that verse, the one who has Shraddha, if the one who has Shraddha gains this knowledge. Because if that Shraddha isn't there, the mind doesn't have the disposition to be open to this knowledge. So here he says the Shraddha Vantaha, the one who has Shraddha. So what does Shraddha really mean? If there's something that we say, Ishwara Anugraha, really, it's by the grace of God, for some reason, by some punya, by some blessing, the relationship you have with your guru and the teaching is one that allows the mind, for whatever reason, to recognize that this is something that I want to know and that I believe has some truth to tell me. I see this is what I want to know. You don't know why this is what you want to know, but when you hear it or you're exposed to it, there's something in you that knows. It rings true. It rings true to the degree that you want to learn. That's Shraddha. It's not about you want to parrot or believe or have a blind belief in whatever the teacher says or whatever the Veda said. It's not about that. It's about your mind wants to know this. It wants to understand it. There's something in you that tells you that this is what I need to know. And you have that toward the teaching and toward the teacher. You can have it just toward the teaching. You hear that teaching and it rings true, but you don't have any connection with the teacher. So somehow you'll have to make your way to find a teacher and a teaching that will give you, well, that will allow your mind to relax, that will allow your mind to be present and to be curious and to really want to learn, want to know. That's what we call the Shraddha. So here in this verse, Krishna is saying, those people who have the Shraddha and who are anasuyantaha. Now that's kind of an interesting word. It can mean people who have jealousy or envy, but the un, it negates it. Asuya means kind of a jealousy or an envy, or it's a kind of a, we can look at it like Swamiji might say, it's a critical buddhi, a critical buddhi, not an intellectually critical buddhi, a criticizing buddhi. Mm. It's a criticizing buddhi. That's how a person that has this asuya can approach this teaching. It's approaching the teaching as well, that can't be right. You know? That's not right. You see what I mean? Say if you're approaching it in that way, there's a certain arrogance there, first of all. You know, that can't be right, but you don't even really know what the teaching is unfolding, but you come in with that attitude. Or, you know, I don't accept that. I think it should be like this. Right? So say you come in with that attitude. That person doesn't have a relationship with the teaching to want to learn what it has to say. It's totally different if you want to learn what something has to say and want to learn it very deeply, and you can say, I don't understand this, or how could that be true? That's a totally different attitude than to say, I don't think you know what you're talking about, and I don't think... You know? And, you know, I mean, I don't think the Vedas are anything special. What do they know, really? That attitude, you can have that attitude, but you won't get the knowledge with that attitude because your mind's not in a proper disposition to be able to see what these Vedas are unfolding as a means of knowledge. The Vedas themselves are operating as a means of knowledge to take your mind step by step by step to recognize something that is actually there. And so say your mind isn't open to seeing that, or to understanding it, or to taking it on faith. But it's not taking it on blind faith into eternity. It's taking it on a faith pending understanding. You know, there's an openness pending understanding. There's something to be known and understood here. Let me try to learn it and understand it. And so that attitude, it's a very special attitude. You can't make yourself have that. You know, you can't just come and imagine it. I mean, it's just like you can't make yourself fall in love with somebody. Right? You can think, oh, they're such a wonderful person and they're a nice person. Fall in love with them. You know? It's not like that. It's a gift. And, you know, and Shraddha is a great gift. That's why it's considered to be Ishwara Anugraha. It's a grace of God. It's a blessing. It's tremendous punya because it allows you to be present to the teaching that's being given. So he says, Shraddha Vantaha and then Anasuyantaha, people who are like that, those type of people. And then he says, Muchente Tepi. Tepi means they also. Muchente, they also, these people also are liberated from karma. They also. So what he's saying is, it's not just, it's not, because now he's teaching karma yoga. Now, it's not just the people that have gone into the forest. It's the people that are staying in the world who understand this teaching that I'm giving to you right now for antakarana shuddhi. They as well become freed from all karma. Not just the sannyasis. That's the thing to understand. It's not just the sannyasis also become free from all karma. The karma yogis also become free from all karma. But to become free from all karma is to be liberated, is to recognize that I am free from all karma. It's not that the body stops acting, or that the mind stops thinking, or that the cells start moving. I mean, there's nothing but karma going on here, on every level. So in terms of your body, mind, sense organs, and your engagement in the world, there is no time that you're free of karma. So to recognize yourself as free of karma is to recognize yourself as the self. The self is the one who is free from karma. Nobody else, nothing else. Everything in Maya is in continual motion. And so the karma yogi, as well as the sannyasi, the karma yogi who is following this teaching of mine for antakarana shuddhi, that person also gains knowledge and becomes what we call a sarva karma sannyasi, one who is free of all karma. Right? Sarva, all karma. So all karma, sannyasi, one who is free from all karma. The sarva karma sannyasi is the jnani. The one who practices karma yoga for antakarana shuddhi gains knowledge. The sannyasi who must practice antakarana shuddhi in order to have the sannyasi who must practice karma yoga in order to gain the antakarana shuddhi, that one also gains knowledge. The karma yogi lifestyle, sannyasi lifestyle, both need karma yoga in order to resolve the conflicts in the mind, to have that proper attitude, and both gain knowledge. When both gain knowledge, both have sarva karma sannyasa. And so that's what he's teaching. Who gains that? Those people who have shraddha and are not dismissive of me, as Krishna's talking. They're not dismissing me or this knowledge. They have shraddha, and they follow this teaching of karma yoga. They as well gain this knowledge from jnana nishtha. So, now, of course, what about the others? That's the next verse. What happens? Swamiji has a nice in his bhasha on this next verse, how he introduces this verse is, it's not, well, the first guys are the good guys, and these ones are the bad guys. It's not like that. It's that with this knowledge, with this understanding, you will gain antakarana shuddhi. You will gain jnana nishtha. If you don't have that understanding, there's going to be these problems, right? Ye tve tad abhyasu yantaha, ye tve tad abhyasu yantaha, nanu tishtanti me matam, Nanutishanti me matam sarvajnana vimudhams tan sarvajnana vimudhams tan vidinashtan achetasaha vidinashtan achetasaha Sandhi. Ye tu etat abhyasuyantaha na anutishtanti me matam sarva jnana vimudan tan viddhi nashtan achetasaha. Ye tu. Tu means but or whereas. So, ye tu, whereas those people, he says, abhyasuyantaha, those people who are dismissing, who are dismissive and critical. Critical without reason. That's how Swamiji did. And if you were to look in his book, that's how he defines this. Dismissive, to say dismissive, but that's the idea. Just critical without reason. You come in with criticizing. You don't have anything to criticize because you don't know anything. I have this problem sometimes in my Eastern Theories class because the people are the, I was going to say children, the kids. I can say that now at my age, I guess. The kids. You know, they come in, you know, ready to kind of share ideas and, you know, well, I think it's like this and I think it's like that, the type of argument, you know. And which is, I mean, I completely understand that and I appreciate it. But, you know, they have to come to a point. They have to mature, even in their academics, to understand that before you can criticize a position, you need to understand that position. Right? But people aren't patient. You have to be patient for that, right? To actually have the wisdom to learn what the other person's position is before you dismiss it. And so, in fact, that is very well developed in India because of debating, the different schools of thought having debates. They know each other's position, you know. They think they do. At least they try to know the other's position. And then as they present, they'll always present what the other person's position is to that person who you're having to that school that you're having the debate with. And then that school will come back and say, no, it isn't like that, you know, until they understand each other. And then once they understand each other, then they can make an actual criticism and there can be a meaningful answer because they're talking to each other, they're communicating. That takes patience. You know, and so we're in a very fast-moving society, and to actually have the commitment to really understand something, even in academics itself, but to really study and understand something, is we can't take that for granted. You know, somebody has to. You have to have a passion for something, like to be able to put in all of those hours. All of the time that it takes to really understand something. You know, that takes a lot of passion. It takes a commitment. So why would a person have that commitment? Well, we would say, in reference to this knowledge, a person will have that commitment if they're a mumuksha. Because once you recognize that all of the means available to you as a human being to become whole and complete don't work. You know, once you realize that, then you become one who wants to solve that. You know, is there a way to solve this problem? And I don't have the answer. But otherwise, we all have the answer, right? I don't feel full and complete, but if I just did that, you know, I'm not really happy, but of course if I did that, I would be. That is samsara. That's exactly samsara. What if you realize that that isn't true? Then you kind of look up to God and you say, or to the universe, you say, if you're there, this was my version, if you're there, please save me. Please, 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 please tell me. And I wasn't kidding. And so, you know, and we all have that some story like that. Right? It's time. I need to know. Because it's not all right with me to not be whole and complete. So that mumukshutvam, once it really is there, and with that Ishwara Nugraha, that grace of God, you need to come into contact with a teaching that will solve this problem. Right? And then that person who has that commitment can have some patience. Because otherwise it's not about patience, it's just about the fun of argument. Right? The fun of debate, the fun of argument. You know, the our warring academicians.
What?
Never mind. I come across this all the time at school. It's kind of one-upmanship. It was the best new idea. Okay, so anyway. He says, those, etad, this, abhyasuyantaha, those people who are dismissive for no reason, critical for no reason, na anutishtanti, those such people who don't follow this, what, maimatam, etad maimatam, they don't follow this teaching of mine, then what? Sarvak jnana vimudan, accusative plural, tan viddi, imperative. May you know, may you understand, tan, that these people, may you understand that these people are sarvak jnana vimudan. They're actually deluded in every aspect of knowledge. Sarva means all. Jnanam means knowledge. Vimuda means deluded. There is no end to their delusion. And that being so, then he says, nashtan achetasaha. Those people who don't have, achetasaha means they don't have any mind. Meaning they don't have viveka. They don't have vairagya. They don't have the ability to discriminate or differentiate. Those people are nashtan. They're destroyed. Nashtan means they're destroyed. But let's see what that means just on a practical level. Let's take achetasaha. The whole thing with understanding of karma yoga, which he's going to get into this in more depth now in the next couple of verses, but it has to do with being able to pull back from your raga dvesha, from your likes and dislikes. In other words, every person has likes and dislikes, whether you're jnani. Every human being has likes and dislikes. Every object in the universe, you'll have some sort of response to, either neutral, or it's pleasing to you, or you don't like it. There's a response to it that's natural, based upon your karmas, based upon your past, based upon what you took for the reason that you took this birth, the karmas that caused you to take this birth, just the prakriti itself. You will be engaged in the world just by prakriti. You will have, just by your nature, you will have preferences, but you also have the ability to say yes or no to those preferences. In other words, your likes and dislikes are there, but they don't control you. You have a choice. You have the ability to say yes or no. There's free will. And so now, if there's free will, you can, and you have discerned, right, that all of these objects in the world actually don't have the capacity to make me full. They give me moments of happiness, but they don't have the capacity to solve my problem. So I've understood that. That's part of the mumukshutvam, right? And so these raga dveshas, even though they are there and they do pull at me, I will go toward the ragas. I'll go toward the likes, the preferences, and I'll go away from the dislikes. That's natural. That's just human. You're not going to be running toward all the things you hate and away from all of the things, you know, that are attractive to you. But you're naturally, just as a human being, your very prakriti, your very nature will guide you toward what you prefer and away from what you don't prefer. But do they overwhelm you? Is that the totality of your life? So with karma yoga, what karma yoga is doing for the mumukshu is giving you some distance on those raga dveshas, especially once you realize, you know, because the distance that it gives you involves a lot of understanding too. It involves knowledge. Remember, the mumukshu is the one who's gaining knowledge. The karma yogi is the one who's gaining knowledge. Where you realize that even though I have likes and dislikes, and that I do have pursuits, it is these pursuits and the fulfillments of these desires really have nothing to do with my wholeness. They have nothing to do with my happiness at all. And so karma yoga teaches you how to be in this world, how to go after your pursuits, because they're there, and they're drives that you have, how to go after those pursuits, but to receive the results of your pursuits, the karma pala, as prasad from the Lord. What does it do? It releases you from the hold of the raga dvesha, right? Because otherwise, my commitment is to the end result of the pursuit, right? My commitment is to fulfilling the raga. That's the commitment. Or to getting away from the dvesha. If I don't get away from the dvesha, the thing that I hate, I'm miserable. If I don't achieve the thing that I love, I'm miserable, right? And so I'm now a samsari, because I'm only happy when I get what I want and I get away from what I don't want. That gives me the reason to be happy. And that means that, maybe 50% of the time, because I'm happy, because the world isn't accommodating me. The world doesn't say, oh, look, she wants this, so let's give her that. Heck with everybody else. If she doesn't want that, okay, let's take that away from her. Who has it like that? Nobody. It's not reality. And so this karma yoga buddhi gives you a way to gain it allows you to pursue, to engage in the world, and at the same time become freed from the hold of the raga dvesha, because you accept the results as something from the Lord. You see, and it's subtle, but it's so powerful. Why it's so powerful is because it doesn't stop you from engaging in your life. It just gives you an attitude with which to engage in your life, where you go full bore toward what you want, as long as it's dark, dharmic, as long as there's some kaushalam there. Kaushalam means you go toward what you want in an appropriate way, in a way that involves dharma. And so you know how to engage in the world in a dharmic way. That's kaushalam. So karma yoga involves both kaushalam and also the accepting everything as prasad, what we call prasada buddhi. Accepting everything is prasad from the Lord. Because if you can do that, and in your teaching you understand the dynamics of this experience of happiness, and that's what Krishna will be talking about in a bit, you understand the dynamics of happiness, you understand the joke of it. The joke of it is that no matter what the object is in the universe, what doesn't make any difference, whatever the object is in the universe, if I want it, that's all you need. You need to want it. I want this so that I can be happy. If you have that, then your mind will single-pointedly engage in that acquisition. Mm-hmm. When you finally, through the so much toil and suffering, you finally get it, you get this object that you've engaged in and single-pointedly, at that moment that you fulfill that desire, your mind relaxes. And it does. Your mind doesn't want anything at that moment. And so you experience happiness. You experience happiness because the mind is relaxed. It has nothing to do with the object. And what about when you totally understand this, and yet, because of your nature, and because of your past experiences, because of your karma, you still want that. In spite of what you know, you still want that. Even though you know it has nothing at all to do with your well-being. You could as well just relax and be just as happy. Right? You could be just as happy, more happy. Because you don't have to go through all of the suffering to get the things. You know? So you could just as well relax, but no. There are some skaras in there. There's, you know, desires and karmas and prarabdha, all kinds of things are there that are pushing me. The prakriti itself is pushing you in spite of your knowledge. And so Krishna says, yes, exactly. And so approach it like this. Approach your life with this karma yoga buddhi, and those things will all drop off in time. Because just by having that attitude, you're releasing pressure. You're releasing stress from the mind. And so the mind itself becomes disengaged. It becomes relaxed. Because I'm allowed to fulfill my desires, but I know that as I get the results of my actions, I receive it as prasad from the Lord, so I don't react one way or the other. I can say, you know, I accept the result of this action. Didn't work out the way I want, and so I'll try again. And then you receive that with that prasada buddhi. So you're always in relationship to the Lord. And so because of that, the mind becomes quiet and relaxed. When it becomes quiet, more quiet and relaxed. When it becomes more quiet and relaxed, your baseline of peace changes. Right? Because you're no longer so committed to you're no longer so dependent upon getting things your way, and yet you're free to engage. See, that's it's a beautiful thing. So just with the karma yoga buddhi, that's why in the previous verse Krishna says, you know, just offer everything to me, all of your karmas, all of your actions. Now he's talking as Ishwara. Karma yoga buddhi, you just, you know, offer all of these actions and all of these results, offer all of them to me. You know? And then pursue your life with that karma yoga buddhi. And with that, you also, if you do that, you also will gain this knowledge, jnana nishtha, in the same way that a sannyasi will. Sannyasi has to do the same thing until that becomes a given. Once it becomes a given, then the mind's not a problem anymore. And so your mind knows how to live in the world. See, part of this knowledge is this: your mind itself is the one that has the problem. It's not the Atma. Yourself doesn't have a problem. Yourself is free. The mind has a problem. But now the mind is the one that has to gain knowledge, and part of gaining knowledge is how to be in this world. How to be a jiva. Here I am. You say you have jnana nishtha. You're really rooted in this knowledge. But here's this body, mind, sense organs person that is living in this world. You know? So, how to be in this world? How to relate? When I recognize myself that I am part of Ishwara, that this upadhi is part of Ishwara, what does that mean? How to be in the world as part of Ishwara? See what I mean? So that's part of the teaching. It's not just, you have to understand all of that. It's not just saying, you know, I'm Brahman, so let me just close my eyes. Mm-hmm. You can do that, but if you open them, you're in trouble. Right? So the vision, the Vedantic vision, isn't just that I'm Brahman, pure Satchitananda. It's that I am the whole. If you say I am Brahman, that's absolutely correct. But you have to be able to say that all of this is Brahman. This is Brahman. And if you can say this is Brahman, then you can say this is Ishwara. Whether you say this is Ishwara, this is Brahman. You know, if you say this is Ishwara, you also have to be able to say this is Brahman. You know, I could say, you know, this is the clay pot. This is the clay pot, or I could say this is clay. If I'm talking about the pot, what if I say this is a clay pot? That's like saying this is Ishwara. This is Ishwara. But I can also hold up the clay pot and say, this is clay. This is clay. This is nothing but clay. I can say, like, this is Brahman. This is nothing but Brahman. This is only Brahman. Or I can say this is Ishwara. If I say this is Ishwara, I'm saying this is Brahman with all this manifestation of knowledge. But in fact, like the clay pot, there's nothing here but Brahman. So I have to be able to say, you know, I am Brahman. I am the whole. This is nothing but myself. But then, what does that mean? You can understand this is all me, but now here's this jiva walking around in the world. So what is it like to walk around in yourself? Right? This is Brahman. This is Brahman. This is Brahman. I'm walking around in Brahman. Brahman is walking around in Brahman. See what I mean? So that's why when Arjuna, you know, in the second chapter, he says, well, how does a wise person walk? How do they talk? How do they sit? What do they do? Swamiji, sometimes when we're teaching this, well, Arjuna can be made fun of for asking that question, but actually it's a appropriate question.
Mm-hmm.
Because what does it mean to have knowledge? What does it mean? How does a wise person negotiate the world? You know? And so the Bhagavad Gita especially goes into every possible question a person might have about that. Because even with knowledge, part of your knowledge has to be, here is this person, here is this creation, here is Ishvara. How does it all fit together? So that's why he goes into really, really beautiful depth there. So when he says in the second line, for those people that don't follow this, they don't follow this vision of mine. They're critical. They don't follow it with, and they're critical of it for no reason. Those people, first of all, people have no viveka. There's a chetasaha. There's no viveka there. And if there's no viveka, then that person is going to time and again be destroyed. It's true. You're destroyed time and again just in your day-to-day experiences. Because every experience that you have perishes. There is no experience that you have in Maya that doesn't perish, that isn't destroyed. So on every level, time and again, you're destroyed. You can change your attitude and not be destroyed, right? You can pull back from that destruction. You can pull back from the attachment to any given thing, you know. And then in reference to that, you won't be destroyed. But you will be destroyed in reference to anything that you are attached to, because that thing by nature is perishable. And that thing is perishable, right? So I lost my train. Oh, I know. Okay. The sarva jnana vimudhan, and all of your knowledge is incorrect, right? Because if you think that this and this and this and this is the reality, that this physical world is, this physical perishable world is the reality, and you are a jiva, that's who you are. You are this physical person. You are this mind with sense organs and a body. That's your reality. And this world is what it is, even though it's infinitely divisible and you can never find anything here. But still, you think that you can. This is your knowledge, right? This is, so everything that you are knowing is being held within ignorance. And so there's nothing in your experience that's not vimuda, that's not delusional. It's delusional. That's why Krishna says, you know, what is night to a jnani is day to an ajnani. You know? And what is night to an ajnani is day to a jnani. It's what it is. It's absolutely what Swamiji will say, ulta. You know this word, ulta? It's absolutely backwards, you know? Because for an ajnani, this is a world creation, and I am a little pocket of consciousness living in it. This is the reality, and I'm a pocket of consciousness living in it, and I'm subject to birth and death. And for a jnani, there is nothing but consciousness. I am the self of the whole. And this really is nothing but an expression of my being. This manifestation of the creation is a manifestation of my being. And the whole creation is consciousness. The whole creation, in fact, is myself. And so there's a totally different, your orientation to the world is going to be totally different. So it's like night and day. So here, Krishna is saying, if a person thinks that they can, another way of just saying this, vimuda, if for a person who thinks they can become whole and complete and satisfy their aspirations and gain knowledge, gain understanding in the world and complete themselves in the world, those people are deluded in countless ways. And time again, using Shankara's Bhasha, time and time again, they will be destroyed. Because everything that they're attached to is perishable. Mm-hmm. So, it's a harsh word, right? The nashta means that which perishes, that which comes to an end, that which is destroyed. And of course, if your reality, what you think is reality, is perishable, then there's no end to the destruction that you'll be experiencing. If you think that your ananda, or your wholeness, your fullness is dependent upon a thing, then your fullness itself, your well-being, is perishable. Time and time again. Because the thing that you've attached it to is perishable. And so what can you do about that? Nothing. And so there's no way out of that understanding except knowledge. How else can you get out of it? Because it is a fact that everything within the creation is perishable and changing. That's a fact. And so, if that fact happened to be true, then you would be correct. If the fact isn't true, it needs to be corrected. Right? It's not that you can make the world be otherwise. It's just that the way that your orientation to the world is not correct. And so you can correct that through knowledge. But you can't go out and change the world to make it okay for you. You can't make something that is perishable not be perishable. See what I mean? So that's why it's Krishna in other verses too. He uses big language, you know? I mean, to say that all of your knowledge is delusional. You know, it's pretty sweeping, you know? You know? And that there, you have no viveka. You have to take all of your knowledge is delusional and you'll be destroyed. So it's better not to go that route. This is the where he uses the two. It's bit for if you're thinking like this, this is how it will end up. So he's not trying to scare you, but it's true. That's the thing. It's true. Because and I think the mumukshu is the one who kind of doesn't have the solution, but recognizes that truth and thinks, oh my God, there is no way out of this because this is the nature of the creation. It's perishable. Everything about it. Every single thing about it. There's no way out. There's no way I can become, you know, a whole and complete person. I only get these little glimpses. But there must be something more. There must be something more. And that's when you throw up your hands to God. Okay, let's stop there. Purnamada, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.